When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to another West London Sport Keep Your podcast on the back of what's been a dismal week for Rangers, who followed up Saturday's 2-1 home loss to Millwall with a 3-0 defeat to Sunderland at Loftus Road last night. Sinny Dieng's error for the first Sunderland goal was followed by Ilias Chair's missed penalty. I mean, former Rangers loanee Jack Clark, who played more like Petula Clark during his brief stint in W12, bagged two late goals. Thousands of blokes were left thinking as they sloped out the ground that maybe taking the misses out for Valentine's Day dinner wasn't such a bad shout after all. With a visit to informed Middlesbrough coming up on Saturday and a treatment room that resembles a scene from the series finale of Casualty, there's no respite in sight for under fire Rangers boss Neil Critchley, who's tasted just one victory in his 11 games in charge. For the team, that record stretches back to one win in 17 games. But the former Blackpool boss is firmly in the firing line after a fourth 3-0 league defeat since the resumption of the season following the World Cup. I'm joined as ever by former Rangers striker Kevin Gallant. And once again by QPR programme editor and former Kilburn Times sports editor, Ben Costi. Firstly, to you, Kev, it's not been good, but surely the problems of this team go deeper than the manager. Rightly or wrongly, he must be skating on thin ice.
Yeah, well we all know in football it's a results business for managers. And since he took charge, it's been poor. There's no getting away with it. And the last two home games haven't been nowhere near good enough levels for QPR in the future, in the past, or whatever. Just not good enough. And it's all for us well and good. Always blaming the manager. It can't always be the manager's fault. There's something quite not right down at the club at the moment. Because at the end of the day, when you're a football player and you cross that white line, you've got to have a bit of personal pride. You've got to want to win. You've got to want to run and tackle. If you're a striker or a forward, you want to take people on. You want to get shots in and goal. You're a defender. You want to win your headers. So, you know, I mean, there's no way Critchley is telling the lads to play like that. In the last two games, I mean, it's just, especially at home as well, if you're in front of your home supporters, it's just poor, and it's a difficult one. But if you don't get results quick, he ain't going to be there for long, unfortunately for him.
Ben, it's hard not to think the manager's been thrown a bit of a hand pass, you know, given the circumstances when he arrived at the club and with so many loan signings already here. Unable to play, sort of limited what he could do in January to kind of put his stamp on the team.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point to make, Ian. I mean, he's inherited a situation where I think a lot of people were feeling a bit sorry for themselves after the whole Mick Beale departure saga. And yes, Neil Critchley's not been lucky in terms of injuries. That's also true. He's ended up with his first choice centre forwards in hospital with pneumonia, now thankfully recovering. At the time, no obvious replacement. He's ended up with a situation where, having had four centre halves available, he's now down to two. No cover for them or at left back either. And midfield, until recently, Stefan Johansson had been out injured for 3 months. Until recently, he's had no real options in midfield either. So I think it's got to be difficult when you're in a situation where you can't change it around as much as you would probably like. And after a poor performance, you've got really little option but to go to the same bunch of players and say, go again. You might tinker with it. You might change the shape slightly, but by and large, you're reliant on those same group to go out and somehow improve themselves. So I think, yeah, it has been difficult circumstances, but as Kev has said, this is a results business. And yeah, there's no real sugarcoating the fact that the results, certainly since the turn of the year or since Christmas, Boxing Day, you would say, have been nowhere near good enough.
Ben, Ian, how long are we doing this podcast? 2 years? Ben, you were doing it at the start. And I'm not saying I know it all. I'm not going to go. But I have been banging on about the club and the lack of strikers at the club. And every window we've talked about, I keep talking about strikers. And we're going to talk about it in the summer strike. I just don't get why don't we get some strikers in? I can't get my head around it.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think
everyone's calling for it. Every fan, every Tom, Dick and Harry in the stand is calling for strikers. We ain't got any. Mm. And we have to revert to Chris Martin, who's a 34-year-old. And you know, I'm not going to, because I think he's a good player. I played with him when I was coming to the end of my career at Luton, and he's a good lad. He knows what he's doing, and he's runners off him. If he gets the ball into him, he'll hold it and he'll put people in, but you need runners in behind him. He needs pace around him and to get the best out of him. But we're reverting to a three-month signing to try and get us out of this situation when we've all been calling out for strikers for the last 2.5-3 years. I just don't get it.
Yeah.
Everyone can see it.
Yeah. I mean, you look at the injury list, you've got Clark Salter, who was brought in to replace Barbe, who played every week. Clark Salter, he's played 12 games. You've got Ethan Laird, he's injured again. Tyler Roberts doesn't play. Taylor Richards never plays. Liam Balogun was let go by Glasgow Rangers because he was injury prone. Players all brought in by Beale. I mean, I feel a bit of sympathy for Critchley. You know, when you throw in Chris Willett being injured, Luke Amos is always injured, Dykes is out, Johansson can't play 2 games in a week. But as you say, there needs to be some accountability in the recruitment department about, you know, these players have, you know, some of the players are just not robust enough. Just because the previous manager wanted them, and he's up in Scotland now winning PR awards against Partick Thistle, he's not here to answer the question, why did you sign these players? You know,
the model of QPR is, you know, we have a coach and then we have people behind who get the players in. So we've talked about this, you know, does the manager choose the players? Or that's the old school, is manager brings in the players, the manager gets sacked and there's a turnaround of players and it costs loads of money. Where the new model is, and what it's at QPR is, the club buy the players and say to the coach, there's your players, coach them. That's the model, supposedly, that QPR have got. But have they?
Yeah.
Now, regarding Barbe, in a back four, he wasn't good enough in a flat back four. But in a back three or five, he was good enough. And one thing about him was he played every game. At the moment, QPR, we're playing a flat back four and we're all over the place.
Mm.
I mean, Dickie's not half the player in a flat back four than what he was in a three. Wasn't, isn't he? Yeah. So, I mean, Critchley's got to take a little bit of stick for, I think, the shape. And, you know, on Saturday, he's playing Andre Dizel, right midfield. He's got Willock on the bench. I know he came on and got injured, but you, how can you have on? I'm baffled. You're not helping yourself. You're at home.
I'm in agreement with you about the shape, Kev. As you know, I always felt three at the back is a better option for the players you've got. But the problem, of course, you've got at the moment is there literally aren't enough bodies to go three at the back. I suppose technically you could perhaps put Osman Kakai in as a right-sided centre-back, but then that's all your defenders you're playing in one go. You're not going to do that. So it has almost been forced on Critchley. Whether he prefers a back four or a back three, he's now got no option but to stick with what's there, I feel.
I know, I agree with that at the moment, but if everyone was available, would he still play a flat back four? That's the question. We don't know that answer. So, but looking at it right at the moment, Dickey and Dunn in a flat back four, look to me, they haven't got the legs to play it.
Yeah. I mean, you need a left-sided defender to play in a back three. And Clark sort was brought to the club for that reason. But I don't think Critchley's had him available maybe two games.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, Ethan, I mean, Kakai, I mean, I think Kakai did okay when he came on last night, but I think he's better as a central defender than he is a fullback. But again, if Ethan Laird is out injured again, then who's the right back? He's going to have to play right back. So you're stuck with, you know, the same back four that's going to play against Middlesbrough on Saturday, because, you know, that decision to let Connor Marston go out on loan doesn't look so wise now, but I can understand why Marston wants to go out on loan.
We talked about this last year on this pod, about how many muscle injuries QPR get.
Yeah.
And we're here again in the same place again. You know, it's not impact injuries that I'm hearing about. These are muscle injuries, which in a way can be preventable if you rehab, or as they call it in modern day football, prehab, where prehab is basically prevention of injuries. Impact injuries, you can't, if someone tackles you and you get a whack, then, you know, that's, you're unlucky. But muscle injuries, we talked about this last year where we had loads of muscle injuries, hamstrings and this, and it's the same again this year. So,
see, I wonder as well, you look at it, when the team's doing really well, everyone's fit and wanting to play. I look at it now and something that Critchley said on Monday, when we spoke to him, that Tyler Roberts said he didn't feel right to play on Friday. Now, I understand where a player's point of view is, like, well, I'm not quite right. But surely, he doesn't. That sounds to me like he doesn't want to play. He doesn't fancy it. You know, taking the easy option, and you have to go, well, you've got blokes like that in your squad that are just sort of not quite right. I mean, Taylor Richards, I know he's had a close friend passed away very sadly, and that is why he missed a couple of games. But this player he's barely played. Why is he being signed? That's the question I would ask. Why are you signing someone that's played, has had 40 games in 3 years, and you make him a season-long loan signing? I understand the reason why they signed him. You know, he is a talent and, you know, succession signing, et cetera, et cetera. But that's a loan signing spot that's been taken up by Richards and Roberts. And to bring in another striker in January, or bring in another defender, you can't do it because, you know, these deals have been agreed. And again, I'll put it down to, you know, the former manager's gone, so you can't, you know, apportion all the blame to him. But where's the recruitment department in this? Why?
And I think one QPR, thing.
Why are the QPR board allowing to be so entranced by Mick Beale? This is Mick Beale again, where he's coming in. It was important for me to get this job because could have a say in recruitment. He said that. He said that when he got the job at Ibrox, a chance for me to be involved more in the recruitment side of things. His recruitment's been terrible. And it seems to me like Neil Critchley is suffering because of it. Is that unfair?
I think one thing you've got to throw into the mix as well, Ian, is that, you know, quite a few years ago, the plan, if you like, included the idea that there were going to be players coming through the youth system into the first team. And some you know, some of the managers that have been there in recent years have made efforts to make that happen. But we haven't, with the exception of Sinclair Armstrong, who I think we'd agree is promising, but not yet the finished article by any means. You know, who's coming through? And if you look at it in squad terms, you would be saying, well, hopefully you've got two or three lads coming through who will, you know, thicken that squad out a bit. And that's not happening. And as a result, you're ending up with five, six lone players every different season and then another lot the following season.
But Ben, is surely this is the time where you'd think, if there's anyone in the academy, this is your time to get in the team.
Yeah.
The team players are not doing it at all. The fans would be buzzing to see fresh legs, fresh face from the academy. So that says to me that the academy is not good enough. And I speak to people in football and they say, what's going on at QPR? The culture at QPR. And I keep hearing, oh, the academy, it's all about developing players. It's not about winning games. And I'm thinking, okay, so we're near the bottom of every year in the league, in the academy, 18s, 23s, whatever, and we're not producing players. So we're not doing either. So if we're bottom of the league, okay, but producing players, then well done. Bottom of the league, not producing players, that ain't good.
Why? I'm going on Monday to Fulham. They're playing the under 23s Premier League quarterfinal competition. So, I mean, I will say there are a couple of decent players in that 23s, but they've got now is maybe it's a chance to have a look at them.
Ian,
there's a right back gone.
They're playing in the under 23s.
Yeah, but they're then.
If you're making the first team, you should be around it like Sinclair Armstrong, 19, 20. I'm not giving it the big and I was playing at 19, I was playing at 18, 19, 20. I wasn't playing for the under 23s when I'm 23.
No, but these lads are like 18, 19. They're not 23 year olds, but they're playing in the 23s. That's what I'm trying to say. And there's a right back, Arcole Boyd. He might have a chance. Be interested. Maybe he should get called up, play right back at the weekend if Laird's out. You know, but as you say, it's difficult, isn't it? I mean, it does seem across the board, it's difficult. There aren't, I mean, looking at other clubs, are there many clubs that are bringing in loads of kids from their academies? Are the academies too cosseted nowadays? Is it too, the step up from the academies into first team football? I can't think off the top of my head, any club off the top of my head that's bringing their kids through their first teams are littered with young academy players. Is the system too soft across the board, Kev?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's like...
That gap between going up from the 18s into the first team, there aren't many clubs that are doing it.
I just think if you're like... You have sort of a succession. It's like in the... I don't like going and saying in the old days because people say, oh, you're dying or whatever. If you were good in the under-18s, you then step up and train with the reserves and then the first team. Do you know what I mean? I mean, are these lads training with the first team? Because that's the way you get better. I mean, I hear... I went for a walk before we came on this podcast and I was just thinking about... There's this big thing in this country and people keep talking about coaching, coaching, coaching. Now, Neil Critchley, I read before he's got the job that he's got every badge and he's in... under everything. Now, as Neil Critchley is probably a great coach, but that doesn't mean anything because when I'm 19, 20, he ain't coaching me how to control the ball and making me, do you understand? There's a big thing about this, oh, he's a great coach. Neil Warnock is probably been our best manager for the last 15 years, whether we like him or not, everyone's got a different opinion, but he's been our most successful manager. He done no coaching. He's a manager. He's a motivator. Neil Critchley's probably a best coach, great coach. Is he a motivator? It doesn't. Dave McIntyre said it on Twitter a few months ago. QPR like a big personality. I'm not sure he's got that. And I know I'm going on tangent, but it's just like things are coming into my head because I went to the game yesterday and I went on Saturday and I'm frustrated. People are talking to me and I'm getting it from all, what do you think? What do you think? And it's all coming. I went for a walk and it's all coming into my head. So this thing about being a coach, honestly, what are you going to tell? You got a coach, Sene Dieng, not to drop the ball. Drop the ball. You're going to coach Ilias Chair to miss the penalty? No, no. Just whack it hard and low in the corner, and if the keeper saves it, we'll all out, put our hands on and say, great save. It's like a mentality, and it's a culture at the club.
Yeah. I mean, it does appear that...
Because you mentioned about motivation and so on. I'm interested to know your thoughts, because from talking to another former professional about, you know, who motivates players when they're having a bad run, and he was very much of the view that, you know, people always say, well, that's down to the manager or the coach. But he said, no, when I was playing, it was players in the team who would be, you know, calling you out for if you weren't tracking back, or if you weren't getting your balls in the box, or whatever it was. I mean, from your era, would you agree with that? That primarily it's 100%. Down to people on the pitch.
So before the match, the manager do a team talk, and then everyone gets together and says, come on, we're going to have a right go. And we'll say, and this was at QPR, and like a night game, and look, let's get the crowd on side. Someone make a tackle. Get them slide tackle. Have a shot on goal. Get the crowd right behind you. And then if people don't do it, you dig them out. If someone didn't cross the ball, I'd be saying to the right winger, put the ball in the box. Because if you don't put the ball in the box, I ain't going to score. And then if I don't score, I'm going to look bad and I'm going to get dropped. So put the ball in the box for me. And you sort of, it's a bit of a camaraderie and respect of teammates. If the centre half ain't heading, win your headers. Do you know what I mean? You chat, and you can have a go at people on the pitch. I don't know what they're doing. And like have a proper argument. But then after the game, you're shaking hands. Let's have a drink afterwards. Not a problem.
I mean, you've been in QPR teams. I kind of hark back to the 99-2000, around then. I think Jerry was the manager. I mean, that team nearly went down. It stayed up in the last game of the season against Palace. But there was a run in that season where it looked really bad. They couldn't buy a goal, couldn't get a win. What kind of got you over the line in the end? What was it? Was it just you had better players and the form they were showing? Or do you think there was, you know...
And there was a lot of problems at the club. And Jerry sort of came in and steadied the ship. And then that last game against Palace, we won 6-0 and stayed up. And George Scholes scored a world-class goal, which he'd never done before or since. So what I'm trying to say, the luck is like, it can change very quickly. I mean, last night, Sene Dieng drops the ball. We're 1-0 down. 1-0, we get a penalty, and you're thinking, you score this, the whole picture can change. And it can change very quickly on the pitch. But, you know, it's hard to put your finger on it. You've got to get together. You've got to show team spirit. You've got to work. You need to get the fans on side as well. And at the moment, I can see the fans are very frustrated, like they should be. And the way to doing that is putting in performance, hard work, and don't fold. QPR folded last night in the end. And it was just a poor. It's hard to put your finger on it, but you need a win quickly. And you need, I mean, I went to the game last night and I said, look, we've got to win soon. Can't keep losing. Something's got to change, but it happened again and we lost.
Yeah. I mean, it does appear more and more in modern football that the PR of a manager is everything. I mean, you look at Nathan Jones, I mean, his bizarre match ramblings at Southampton. I mean, unlike Jones, Critchley hasn't stopped short of claiming he was one of the best coaches in Europe and his best job. But, I mean, he's a softly spoken, mild-mannered sort of guy. And a nice fella, my experience is dealing with him. I mean, but has he got the personality to be a QPR manager, or is that sort of massively unfair? I mean, it's a results business. If the team's winning, no one cares about, you know, personality of a manager. That's how I see it. But do you think that to manage QPR is it's a more difficult job than people give me credit for, but do you think to manage QPR, you have to be of a certain type? That's what the fans expect?
I think the fans like that. I mean, going back, I mean, I spoke to my brother who was at Portsmouth and they played Blackpool for a few years when they got promoted. And he said Blackpool were solid at the back, solid, didn't concede much. And he played four midfielders, like four centre midfielders in midfield, like he sort of did against Millwall. So he played two centre midfielders against Mill, and he played Dizel, who's a centre midfielder, right midfield, and he played Chair, who's not really a midfielder, but he played him left midfield, okay? This is what I thought he was trying to do. He played a left footer on the right, and he played a right foot on the left with Chair and Dizel, thinking that the fullbacks would give him the width. As soon as you go 1-0 down, that sort of game plan goes out the window.
Mm.
If you're winning 1-0, you're looking solid. Do you know what I mean? It's hard to break down. But when you're 1-0 down, now you've got to come out and create some chances. And going back to the Millwall game, we put the ball in the box and Chris Martin scored. Yeah? Probably one of the first times we actually just put the ball in the box. For the last 10 minutes, we started putting the ball in the box and looked dangerous. But we didn't do that for the first 80 minutes. Do you know? It was like, I thought we were getting an equaliser because we started just getting the ball and putting the ball in the box. And sometimes I'm watching QPR, it's a little bit intricate and you're going to try and score the perfect goal. Sometimes you just got to put the ball in the box and people got to be in there to attack it.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, they didn't get the ball in the box enough last night. And when they did, they got a penalty.
Yeah.
They played very narrow QPR. That's always my thing. It's always get the ball. I mean, you know, no one likes to see free-flowing football more than me, but sometimes it does seem a little bit over-elaborate where ball comes back, ball goes forward, it goes sideways, it goes, and then teams just sitting deep, and then you've got eight men to try and get behind, and that's where they struggle. There's, I don't know, it's...
If you look you know, at maybe, the stats...
I mean, it is, I mean could
find...
Sorry, Ben. I was just...
Yeah, no, carry on, yeah.
I was just going to say, is Lowe more of a winger than a forward? Could he be the man to play that role out in the wing and get ball? Is that something he should be doing more?
Well, Jamal Lowe is not really, he's not a proper, he's not a number nine, is he?
Mm.
He's sort of a runner, channels and stuff.
Yeah.
When he was at Portsmouth, he played right wing. And there's sort of a little bit of a lack of pace, as in going, you know, to stretch a team, which we sort of missed since, was it Osei Samuel hasn't, I know he's been gone, but we haven't really rectified that. I mean, if you look back, you got Willock, Chair, they don't go on the outside, they come inside and they have shots. Tyler Roberts doesn't go on the outside. The only one who really runs down the channel is Sinclair Armstrong. And I still feel that he needs a season or two on loan at a League One or League Two club, and then you'll see a better player in a couple of years. I think it's too early for him, and it's not fair on him either to be in a situation like this. But we haven't actually got any. That's why Laird and Powell are sort of like your wingers when we've got the ball, and that's what I think Critchley's trying to do, especially against Millwall, where he played Dizel on the right, because he's thinking Dizel will come inside and give Laird the freedom to run down the right side. But I just feel, you know, you're playing Millwall at home and you've got Willock, and I know he hasn't been playing well, but I just don't see how you're going to get the best. If you want Willock to come back to what he was good at, sitting on the bench. Now, there's something's gone wrong with Willock. I don't know the ins and outs of it, but from being that good at the start of the season to now being on the bench, something, I don't know what's going on there.
Ben, sorry, mate, interrupted you there. What was your point you wanted to say?
Sorry, Ben.
No problem. I think I was just going to point out, you know, with reference to the Sunderland game, I think if you look at the stats, QPR have controlled possession. I think it was something like between 55 and 60% possession. And yet, in terms of shots at goal, something like six in the whole game and two of those on target. So that says to me, and it's not an unfamiliar stat, and that says to me there's a lot of possession but not a lot being done with it. And then picking up the point about wingers, I think this is a problem of modern football in general. I think there are very few what I would call wingers anywhere. You see teams lining up with a 4-2-3-1, and sometimes the manager will refer to the wide players or whatever. They're not wide players. They're midfielders who are sort of drifting wide, but they're not wingers. They're not the sort of players that, you know, you will run down that line, beat the fullback, get the cross in. I don't think many teams have those. But certainly, if you don't have any of those players, and I agree, as you say, QPR have not had, since Bright, I say Samuel, a player you would say is an out-and-out winger. If you don't have those, then for me, 4-4-2, not a system that's ever going to be that productive.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. But I don't want to bring Brentford into this, but Brentford are... I was at Arsenal Brentford Saturday for work, and you know, Brentford players, they're a bit like our old school. They're like Wimbledon were when Wimbledon were good in the 90s. You know, it's not disparaging them, but that's basically that. You know, they got three massive centre backs. They got, and they just put balls into the box. They've got a goalkeeper who's got a big kick on him, and Tony can hold off two centre backs. That's what they do, and it works. And teams can't live with it. They just don't know how to defend against it, and. They're not playing two banks of 4-4-4-2, but they're very direct in what they do, and it, you know, and it works. Long throws, free kicks into the box.
They've gone from being like a real passing team to a sort of a direct get up to Tony, flick it on, and have runners off him. That's what they do. And because no one else does it, defenders don't know how to deal with it.
Yeah.
Because everything's sort of intricate. Everyone else wants to score the perfect goal. If you know,
yeah.
If you know what I mean, some, like we said, the last 10 minutes, put the ball in the box against Millwall. Look dangerous. Just put it in there. Put them under pressure. Jack Charlton style.
But, it doesn't get any easier for Critchley and the team. They go to Middlesbrough, where they've had a good record in recent years, actually. I think they've won three of the last four up there. But, it's going to be a tough game. They're going really well under Michael Carrick. They seem very settled. They're in good form. I mean, it's hard to see Rangers getting anything from this game. I'm usually quite optimistic about these things, but it's going to be very difficult up there, isn't it, Kevin?
Very difficult. But on normal circumstances, I'm always quite positive about nicking a result of some sort. But the way it's difficult. I don't really want to do a prediction in this time. Because I'm always positive, and I'm going to go positive. I'm going to go for 1-1 because I always want to, I want to be positive. And if I've ranted a little bit too much, apologise to all those fans out there who might listen to this, but I'm frustrated like the rest of us because I want QBR to do well. But this situation where is it one win in 17? He's got to change. Something's got to change soon. So 1-1, but it's going to be tough. I'd take a 1-1 right now if you offered it to me.
I mean, do you go there looking for a draw? I mean, no one goes looking for a draw, but you pack the midfield, maybe leave Martin up top on his own.
When you go to a team that's doing well or whatever, or badly, whatever. And I could see Sunderland last night. Their manager would have probably said, boys, they're going to come at you for the first 20 minutes. Be solid. Keep it tight. And then the crowd might turn. You might nick a goal. I heard that speech so many times when I played football. You go away from home, keep it solid, keep it tight, get the crowd against them, and then go and play your football. It's what QPR do. Do not concede in the first half, be solid, frustrate them. So I would expect, if I was a QPR manager, I would be like, play deep, solid, and have pace and for like a breakaway and counter-attacking. QPR got to play a counter-attacking game on Saturday for me.
Ben?
Well, I was waiting to see just how positive Kev could be about his prediction, and he's certainly gone above what I would go with, I'm afraid. As you said, Ian, Rangers have had a good record against Middlesbrough recent years, and I'm afraid that's exactly one of the reasons why I can't see that continuing, because I do believe statistically these things catch up with you in the end, a bit like what we saw with playing Luton this season and losing twice after a very good few years. Yeah, I mean, the form Middlesbrough have been in, it's very hard to see Rangers getting anything. And yeah, I would like to be wrong, but I'm afraid I'm going to predict a 2-0 home win.
Yeah, I'm going to go down a similar vein. I just think Rangers have got too many players missing. Chris Willock plays very well against Middlesbrough. In recent visit, he's not going to be able to play on Saturday, you'd think. I just don't see them having the horses available to them to pick a side that's going to be strong enough to go out there and get a result, unfortunately. You know, I'd like a draw would be a really good result just to kind of stop the rot a little bit. But I mean, I think it's going to be maybe a 2-1 defeat. Late goal, disappointment. That's just the way the luck's going from at the moment. So on that cheery note.
what I will say, Ian, and I would like to make this point, I honestly believe when teams are on a bad run, you very often get a surprise result come out of nowhere that halts it. And I'm not saying that's necessarily going to be at Middlesbrough, but I honestly do believe when this run does end, I think it might be one that we're not particularly expecting it to happen.
So sadly, yeah, it is.
We'll
wait and see.
Well, hopefully we'll come out next week all with egg on our face and we can say, yes, we told you how good they were, and they're a 3-0 win. But okay, then. Well, thank you very much, gents. Appreciate your time. And please join us again next week and like, subscribe, and do all those other things we ask you to do. And we'll see you again next week.
Sports Social Podcast Network. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.